All right, let's be real. What has been the hardest thing about your pregnancy and postpartum journey? Is it the postpartum painful sex that nobody talks about? What are you supposed to do with that? Is it the fact that you might have torn during delivery and you have no idea how to heal now that you're in postpartum? Welcome to the Onas podcast, where we bring on mothers, parents, and pregnant postpartum individuals to talk about their journey and their experiences to give that knowledge back to people that need it. And we are also attached to theonascollaborative.com, which is a free online educational directory where we help moms and parents connect to maternity care providers in their local area. We are here to give the power back to you guys so you have a choice in your journey. We'll have space for midwives, doulas, pelvic floor PTs, massage therapist. And as we continue expanding, we hope that we can support you. All right, we hope you enjoy this podcast. Welcome back to the Onas podcast. My name is Erin and I am the founder and also the host of this podcast. This week we have a really important discussion, and I will go ahead and say this week we'll be talking about miscarriage. So this is part one of Amelia's story. Amelia is a photographer and birth worker and also like a website designer and coder and all of the things when it comes to birth work. She is incredibly passionate. She is a mom and a wife, and we're so thankful to have her on today. She's going to be talking about her experience with miscarriage and all the things that her and her husband had gone through. And this will be part one. Part two will come out next week, where she still talks a little bit about her miscarriages, but also going into the pregnancy, birth, and postpartum experience with her daughter, Esme. So we hope you all enjoy this episode.
And I am currently a birth doula consultant slash coach, and I also do like web design services. So kind of a mix of all of those things. I am currently living in Missouri for a short period of time for work, and originally lived in San Francisco in California, and that's where we're kind of heading back to eventually. But with COVID and everything, it's brought us Midwest, and yeah.
Love that. And so, wait, sorry, you're a web designer, you're a doula.
Yeah. It's like all of the things. So my background is website design. So when I was in high school, I got into doing website design kind of as a hobby. And that's randomly how I met my husband. He reached out to me and asked if I would design a website for him. And that's how we got talking. So that's kind of a fun story. I grew up in Oregon, and he lived in Missouri. He kind of grew up and lived within 100 miles of where he was born. So it was a kind of a, I don't know, kind of random story. But then I got into photography around the time that I met him, and was kind of just doing it as a hobby. There was a bunch of friends in my friend group who had all gotten cameras at the same time, and I was like, oh, that's super cool. So I wanted to get a camera too. So I did some professional photography, kind of, you know, started out as a hobby and then built that into a professional business. And so that took me into the whole photography world, really. I did weddings for a while and then just got completely burnt out on that because Eli was working Monday through Friday, just regular, you know, business hours, 9 to 5. And then I was working on the weekends. And so he would come with me occasionally, but it was like we were kind of working opposite schedules, and it was just really stressful. And then occasionally I would also travel. So I was like traveling all over the country because I kind of got myself where I was like booking a bunch of weddings in Missouri, but then people in other areas. I had some weddings in the Carolinas, and then weddings in California, and a couple like abroad, which was super cool and a really awesome experience. Like, but it was also exhausting, and I didn't have a great work-life balance at all during that season. And so I just completely burnt out and landed myself and kind of like, I don't know what I'm going to do next. And like, we decided to move to California. And when I got there, I got a job as a barista and working at Starbucks of all places. And I actually had like the best manager, and I loved that job. I was like, previously I had been getting up every morning, you know, at like 8 or 9 in the morning and just kind of like going to bed super late. And my Starbucks job made me get up at like 3:30 in the morning to open at 4:30. And so it completely changed my life and my schedule to where I was like totally exhausted, but it was really fun because I would get off before noon and then I had the rest of my day to just like enjoy myself. And that was a really fun job. But I moved out of that, and the manager at that store, She got pregnant with twins unexpectedly, and she reached out to me and asked if I would do some photos for her. And I randomly in passing said like, yeah. And if you ever like need a birth photographer or something, like I'd be happy to join you, you know, and help you take some photos of this special time. And I had been around birth. I had some friends who had had home births in Missouri. And so I, you know, just kind of made the offer kind of off the cuff, just randomly. And she actually reached out to me like 6 weeks later or something. And was like, hey, like I'm still pregnant and I think I would love to have you come and photograph my birth if you'd be open to that. And I was like, heck yeah, that sounds like fun. You know, it was like, I'd never been to a hospital birth before, but I thought it would be super cool. And went and photographed her birth. And it was a very pivotal moment for me because I was just feeling very like burnt out and exhausted and didn't really know where to go from there. And I had previously, like while I was living in Missouri and had been like doing practically nanny work for some friends and babysitting a lot and like was around for their births and their new babies, I had thought about getting my doula certification, but couldn't find a certifying body where I lived. And so it just was one of those like dreams that fell by the wayside. And while I was at this friend's, you know, this friend, my manager's birth, it just like, it completely rocked my world. Like, it was like one of those things is just like, this is what I've always been meant to do. Like, mm-hmm. I felt like at home in the birth space. I felt like, you know, my presence there had purpose. Not only was I capturing her birth, but I was always also trying to be supportive and listening to her and just like giving her a massage when I thought about it, you know, and like helping her through it. And both her and her mom, like afterwards, like approached me together and separately. And they're like, we really think that you should go and get your doula certification because you were meant to do this. Mm-hmm. And I called my husband on the way home from that birth. And this is a twin birth, mind you. This is my like first hospital birth. She had a vaginal birth in a hospital with the best doctor. And he was like super chill and very supportive of her wishes the whole way through. She had that her two boys are just absolutely beautiful, and they were nice and chunky too. They weren't tiny babies. And I was like driving home from the hospital, and I told my husband, I was like, this is what I was always meant to do. And I know he was just like, oh crap, like another big job. Like, you thought weddings were bad. You have no idea what you're getting into, you know, like birth, you're on call for like up to 5 or 6 weeks at a time. And, you know, you have to really plan and schedule your life around it. Anyways, I jumped headfirst into it. I started Googling when I got home and looked at all the certifying bodies in the area. And I was like, you know, there was a few things that I really wanted. And I ended up finding Cornerstone Doula Trainings. They were still doing doula trainings in San Francisco at the time. I think now they've transitioned to Portland. Yeah. So they're a wonderful mom and daughter duo. They do a lot of advocacy work. And the training was very pivotal for me. Like, there were a lot of things that I knew, but it opened up my mind to, you know, and like my heart to a whole different side of what doula work was. And that's like what kind of launched me into that doula career in 2016. It was just like the push that took everything. Anyway, so I built that into birth photography and doula support at the same time. And I continued that for the next 3 years. I kind of took all of the web design services, you know, experience that I had with SEO and all of that, and built a business up to where it was very profitable. And also there were bumps and bruises along the way where I was like, oh, like I would get burnt out because I would book too much. And then I would figure out my balance and then come back to the drawing board and be like, okay, I've got to figure out like a way to make this more sustainable. And so that's what caused me to like build systems and really like curate everything that I was doing into just finally tuning it into a system that worked for me and my family. And then when we got pregnant with our daughter in 2019, I want to say. Yeah, 2019, early 2019, we got pregnant with her. We were thinking about moving out of state for my husband's work, and it just worked out to where I was able to take maternity leave at the end of that year and then go into the next. And then I launched my full service doula consultation slash coaching business where I help doulas build systems and websites and help them like find their clients and find their niche and really just like create a doula business that's profitable but also sustainable, because we don't want to burn out in birth work. Like, that's super common. And so just like helping them along the way. And it's really fun because I still have like my piece of birth work, helping these other doulas work in their birth spaces and supporting them in that, in their roles. So it's a really, really unique space and something I definitely really enjoy.
That's amazing. You've had such a journey. And I have noticed that when I meet a lot of photographers who have now found their like niche, is that they typically, it seems like people start in wedding photography.
Yes.
I think wedding photography has a big burnout rate, it seems like.
Yeah, it's one of those things where there's such a wide range of what wedding photography looks like. There's the people who do the small little elopement packages and they plan everything. And then there's the like medium ones where people are just like, your everyday backyard wedding or church wedding. And then there's like the crazy people who are like adventure photographers. And then there's people who are low end and high end. Like, there's some wedding photographers that charge like $200,000 a wedding and things like that. So it's a huge range. And I think people, it's also a really saturated market. And so it can be, it's not difficult to find clients because there's a ton of weddings, but finding, it's similar to doula work in that, in a lot of ways, in that you have to have like systems and structures, and you also have to like know how to use online services in order to have a good client experience and help them to feel well-rounded. But you also have to really schedule your life down to, you know, this is the amount of time that I'm going to edit, and I'm scheduling that out, because like a lot of times when people are self-employed, you just kind of get overwhelmed by everything, all of the business side of things. It seems very, luster, like there's a lot of luster around it when you're first starting out, and then you kind of get blindsided by all these different pieces coming at you, you know, and then tax season hits you and you're like, oh geez, like I owe all this money to taxes. And if you haven't done all of that planning ahead of time, it can be really, really hard. And then like the wedding season is really rough, and then there's like there's a long season where there are no weddings through the winter typically. Yeah. And so that kind of like feast or famine is really hard to deal with. And also just like family life, if you're doing all your weddings on the weekend and your family's like around, you know, working during the week, you kind of have an opposite schedule, so you never see each other. But yeah, it's a fun industry, but definitely exhausting.
Yeah. But it sounds like you've managed to somehow pull all three of your things into one, which is
totally I know. Yeah. It's crazy.
It's incredible though. It's amazing because either way, like, you're still in the birth world, which is what you wanted to be, and that's where your passion lies. And that's
totally
beautiful.
Yeah and I totally see myself in a few years, you know, doing maybe continued birth support. I have a couple other, you know, pieces in the birth world, but I definitely know, like, I have dreams of someday having a nonprofit that kind of like helps nurse midwives and doctors work together in tandem to provide births in the hospital that are similar to a home birth, but then with the backup of an obstetrician, and kind of helping hospitals navigate that, how that looks, you know, to provide both services. That's my like someday dream of like, you know, like maybe some consulting or something between the hospitals and navigating that. But so definitely like big dreams for the future, like all centering around birth for sure though. That's definitely where like my heart lies.
And it's so needed. And I wanted to say that Australia's system is very, very similar to what you're describing.
Totally.
Like most birth centers and birthing suites are actually attached to hospitals. So midwives and OBGYNs work together. And I was,
I love that.
Yeah. And I recently interviewed a motherhood photographer out of Connecticut, and her birthing center is actually attached to her hospital. So maybe you guys could connect, and maybe she could connect you with some of the midwives there. Cause I think, like you said, getting midwives in, cause she said the midwives and OBs at that hospital just work in tandem and they just do beautifully together. And that's exactly what we need in the US because
totally.
I just think, unfortunately, in the US, there's this idea like if you go with a doctor, then you're that type of person. If you go with a midwife, then you're that type of person. But like, why can't they just work together and give everyone like a really great experience?
Exactly. And that's what I feel like I had with my birth, with my daughter, which we'll get into later. But I had my midwives in the hospital. And so, and I see it all around the world and even in certain pockets around the US. And there's, I mean, the US is kind of crazy because it's like 50 small countries in one big country merged. And so you have like really varying statistics and varying experiences with the medical system. And that's why we see like varying rates of like the maternal mortality rate and that sort of thing, just kind of like around the US. But I think there's a big, there has been a big push, you know, I think just from previous experiences with people in hospital births, like when my grandmother had her babies, like they basically knocked the women out and used forceps to deliver, you know, and so they weren't even present and their spouses, you know, they were in the waiting room and not really present for the births of their children. And in a lot of ways that hurt our society dramatically. And it really like kind of put a rift between the natural birth world and the obstetrical birth world, the medical birth world, just because, you know, there's that history and it's hard to come from a place where there's like that background and like want to like have goodwill towards each other. There is very much multifaceted. Mm-hmm. But there's lots of different pieces and I definitely see like big, I'm very hopeful that as time goes on, things will change and people will feel both safe and supported. And then we can make big changes in trauma rates and lowering those and, you know, just give people back their birth and, you know, put it back in their hands. So they're the ones making the choices, but they can feel safe and supported in every choice that they make and not feel like it's one or the other.
Yeah. I love that. And I think it's really important. So the work that you're doing is incredible. And I'm excited to see what you come up with in the future down the line.
Totally.
Yeah. And so today we are actually going to talk about your experiences. So we have talked a lot on Instagram and you've been very open with talking about your experience with miscarriage and loss. So that's what we're going to talk about today as much as you're comfortable with. And
totally.
So I am basically just going to hand off the reins to you and this is your space. So I'm going to give you that.
Thank you. Yeah. So my story is a very complicated story. A lot of different pieces. So I have had 6 total miscarriages before we got our rainbow baby, our daughter Esme. And it's a complicated piece because I grew up in not a very common way. I grew up in a fundamentalist Christian cult, where the primary focus of a woman's self-worth was directly tied to their ability to be a mother and their ability to not only be a mother, but also to raise children. And so if you couldn't have a child for any reason, it was seen as kind of a curse. And you see this in like their all of their Bible stories and everything. The story of Hannah in the Old Testament where she she begged God for a son and he then promised that she would give her son to the temple basically for the ability to have children. Like it was such a like heaviness on her because that was where her self-worth was. And so I grew up thinking this was completely normal and that I was just gonna like get married and have like 13 babies and everything was going to be fine. My mom had 4 children. She did have one miscarriage very early on, but it wasn't like a big talking point. I was probably early teens before I really realized she had a miscarriage or like even thought about it much. I think maybe she mentioned it periodically, but it was when I was super young. It was between me and my next youngest brother. So I have 3 brothers, 1 older and 2 younger. My husband Eli and I met and we got married and moved and we were like, we're going to have a ton of babies and we're just going to like, we had our whole life planned ahead of us. And we found out we were pregnant super early on in our marriage. We didn't even try to like, we just were like, we're just going to start a family right away. And, 2 weeks later, I had a chemical miscarriage. So I had a pregnancy test that was positive for like a minute and then I basically had a very heavy period. And I just remember being like, what the heck? Like, how did this happen? Like, I feel like I'm pretty healthy. Like, you know, and we didn't really even, I don't think we even like went to a doctor or anything. I can't remember specifically. Maybe like briefly, like afterwards, we went and saw a midwife right after, that was like local to the community. And we were like, hey, like, and she was just like, this happens, you know, like maybe we can run some labs and see if you have like low progesterone or anything. And, but she's like, pretty much like this can happen for many different reasons. And the likeliness of it happening again is pretty low. So like, I would just go ahead and try again when you feel ready. And so we did, we didn't hesitate. We continued to try to have a baby. And my very next cycle, we got pregnant again, and things seemed to go super well. Like it seemed like it was going well. Like, of course I was really nervous, you know, as the weeks went by, but it seemed like things were progressing well. And then around the time I would have been 8 weeks pregnant, I started spotting, and it was Christmas Eve, our very first Christmas Eve together. And I was just like, I just remember the pit in my stomach that I was like, I knew it was over. I knew it wasn't good. Even though everything you Google says like, oh, you can have spotting in early pregnancy, like that's normal. Just go see a doctor if you're concerned. So we went and saw a doctor on Christmas Day. Like the bleeding didn't stop. And I just felt like, oh, I just feel like I need to know, like I need to have an answer. And so we went to the ER, and we had a fairly like decent experience in the ER. We had, it was a small town Missouri ER, cause like I said, we were living in Missouri at the time. And they did an ultrasound, and they were like, everything looks perfect, but the baby is like 6.5 weeks and doesn't have a heartbeat. And so you can either have a DNC or you can go home and naturally miscarry, you know, like whatever feels right for you. And I was very much like scared. This is kind of an aspect too of growing up in the fundamentalist cult, is like we were very anti anything medical establishment. So if my brothers had an accident or needed stitches or something, we would definitely go to the hospital then. But otherwise, like we saw all naturopaths, chiropractors. We didn't ever really go to like the doctor for checkups. We didn't have vaccines. We didn't do any of that. And so this was a whole different world for me in a lot of ways. And it's hard to convey like the heaviness of that, of just like getting married, moving across the country, having a miscarriage very early on, and then finding out on our first Christmas that we were miscarrying our second baby, and just feeling worthless and empty and confused and just like all around, like it just sent me into this like deep despair. And about a week later, we just waited it out. We decided that we didn't want to have a DNC just because it was so early on. The chances of, you know, there being any difficulties with a miscarriage was relatively low from what we understood. And so we went home and waited and waited and waited. And it was like a week and a half later before my body basically went into like a mini labor. And it was really hard because I didn't have any family around. My mom was out of state, and I was just like, I wasn't expecting it to be like labor. I had expected it to be like another heavy period during this miscarriage. I didn't realize that it would be like a whole, like, you know, contractions and everything. And we actually, like, the whole baby came out in a little sack, and you could see the whole baby just like sitting there. It was so tiny, like the size of a blueberry. And it was devastating. Like, it just completely devastated me. Like, I thought that like people had miscarriages because like God was punishing them, or, you know, they had done something wrong. And in my heart, I knew that wasn't, you know, I knew that wasn't true. I knew I hadn't done anything wrong for this to happen. But your mind still reels. It's like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have drank that coffee. Maybe I shouldn't have done this, you know, or that or the other. Maybe I should have not stressed out so much about this. And maybe this is all my fault. And just like carrying the weight of that around. And so my in-laws they live on a farm here in southern Missouri, and they raise pastured poultry, but they've like a corner of their farm, they've deeded off into a cemetery. And so people local to the community there's a few friends of theirs buried there. And it's really, I think it's just really cool. So we were able to, you know, bury our baby there, and we got a little miniature headstone and everything. It was like, it was very cathartic to go through that whole process of like, you know, being able to hold the baby and see the baby and everything. especially after the first miscarriage, was just chemical, you know, nothing really stuck. There was nothing visible on any ultrasounds or anything. And so after that, we definitely had follow up with OBs. Like, I had continued bleeding for some time, and then finally went and saw an OB several weeks later. And I was like, you know, this bleeding just isn't stopping. Like, we've definitely seen the baby, we've seen the placenta, like everything seems to have come out, but we're just like, not sure why I won't stop bleeding. And there was a piece of retained tissue that was just like sitting there in my, like holding my cervix open. It's kind of weird. I've never heard of anybody else having an experience like that, but the OB just like removed the tissue and I stopped bleeding within 24 hours. So that was clearly what was holding things up. But it was hard, that waiting time too, of that multiple weeks, because, you know, like everyone said, like, this is just bad luck. Like, this happens to people, like two miscarriages in a row, you know, back to back, maybe wait a couple months, let your body return to normal and try again. This is probably no big deal. Like, it's either the stars align or they don't. But it was also during that miscarriage that I had one of the most devastating experiences I've ever had in my life, when a friend of my husband's family came over to bring a hot meal casserole to us, which is something that here in, you know, in the community here in Missouri, like, when we had our daughter, like, we had just recently moved back to Missouri, and we still like were greeted with casseroles and stuff from people we didn't even know, who just happened to know my husband's family. So this is something that people do. It's kind of like surrounding. And so people from my husband's work, they were all very close, but one of the couples brought by a hot dish, and they gave us this pamphlet of like, that said like, why miscarriage happens. And I didn't touch it for a while. It was like sitting on the kitchen table. But then like the next day or something, I opened it and read it. And this booklet just like explained that the reason we had had this miscarriage is because we had stopped going to church, and God was punishing us, clearly. And we had left the, like, both of us individually had left the church at this point too. I had come out of the church and realized like, this is very toxic. And there was a lot of beliefs that I was in my own way trying to deconstruct, but hadn't gotten very far away from the church yet. At this point, I was still open to the church. And this just completely devastated me. And I was so angry. And even to this day, like, I still feel angry about it. And I feel angry for myself in that space of just like, it's so hateful and sad that someone would believe that and tell someone who's grieving that. But I don't know. And that just came between, that just like sent me into a deeper spiral of just like pain. And I started dealing with what now I recognize as postpartum depression. Didn't want to get out of bed. It was really hard for me to just even like move. And it's hard because it was such an early miscarriage. It was so, you know, early on, but it's just so pivotal. And so, you know, like when you find out you're pregnant, you plan the next 18 years of your life.
Even
if it's like just 24 hours that you know you're pregnant, you know, you've got everything planned. You start thinking about a nursery and like what your family is going to look like, and family photos and Christmases and Easters and, you know, all these like camping trips and everything. Your mind just goes there in dreams. And then to lose a baby, even very early on in pregnancy, it just takes all those dreams away and it kills all of them in an instant. And I just like, I didn't know how to get out of that space. And my husband would go to work every morning and I would beg him to stay home with me. I was like, I don't want to be alone. I don't know anyone here. I was living in a new state. I didn't have anyone. And my family was all back in Oregon and they were all still part of the church and I wasn't. And I was trying to like separate from that space and forge my own space. And so I was kind of between all of these different places and didn't really know anyone local yet. And my husband called my mom eventually and he was like, I just don't know what to do. Like, I just don't know what to do. Maybe you can call her and help her. Like, you know, he was desperate. And my mom, I love my mom, but it was just a really hard thing because she called me and she said, you just need to get out of bed and you just need to do it. You just need to get out of bed and put this behind you. And her exact words weren't, you know, harsh or mean. They were actually like, you know, I really could have benefited from being in the sunshine, but it wasn't like the holding space and being like, I know you're devastated. I know you're hurting.
Yeah.
It was get up and get going with your life because this life happens. This is sad, but life happens. And that just sent me into like, I don't know, deeper despair. And it wasn't until I got involved in helping, I like started doing some volunteering around town. So it was nice because I could get out of the house and that helped me a little bit. And we went and saw doctors and they all said the same thing, like just bad luck, not really a big deal. Two miscarriages in a row isn't a big deal, especially since the first was like so quick. It was like a chemical pregnancy. So wait a couple months and try again. So we did. We waited a couple months. We tried again and had another chemical pregnancy. We watched the HCG levels go up and then drop again. And it was weird because the third time around, I fully expected the miscarriage. Like I had no hope that this was going to work. But part of you always hopes. But at the same time, it's like you just become jaded and you're just kind of like, well, we'll try, but I doubt anything's going to happen. And when the miscarriage happened, I was like, I'm done trying. Like, I'm just done. I can't do this right now. Like, we need to get some answers. We need to seek this out. So we actually waited for quite a while. We just kind of like stopped trying. And it wasn't until like over the next year, we kind of saw different doctors. We saw some Chinese medicine doctors. We saw regular doctors. We tried to see a fertility doctor. They did workups. Everyone said, you're perfect. Nothing's wrong with you. Just bad luck. And in my gut, I was like so confused because I was like, I don't think miscarriage just happens randomly. Like maybe I'm like have lupus or maybe I, you know, have this or that or the other, but everything always came back completely normal. And we'd get a little, we'd go see another doctor and they'd be like, oh, well, this is something that we can test for. So they tested for like natural killer cells and they tested for MTHFR and like, I would have random little things pop up. They're like, oh yeah, you have elevated this or that or the other. But like, you know, we don't know that this is necessarily a link to fertility right now. Like this is just speculation because this is just new research or whatever. And everyone said like, you guys are super young. We were super young. I was 18 when I got married and my husband was 21. So we were like babies. Looking back, way too young now, way too young to have kids, but you know, like you just, it is what it is. It was where we were at and we thought we were ready. And oh my goodness, it was just like, it was a really hard thing because it was this like whole realization, like that my self-worth could not be tied up in having children at all. Like that's just not where my worth was. And I had to come to that conclusion on my own because of coming out of like the cult and being, you know, growing up very skeptical of the medical community, I was very like, I wouldn't go to see a therapist or anything. I just buckled up and tried to just like carry on. And it took its toll on our relationship, my husband and I's relationship. It was very hard. And both of us were deconstructing religion in just like a general sense and just figuring out like, oh my gosh, like we both were raised in very hard circumstances and hard belief systems. And that took a long time to deconstruct. And I think in some ways we still are. But we stopped trying. We did have one pregnancy in the fall of 2015 where it was another chemical pregnancy. And so we stopped trying. We just weren't trying. We just stopped. And in 2016, early 2016, we moved to California. And around that time, I had been doing wedding photography all these years and had these miscarriages and everything. And then we moved to California and I started working. I stopped doing wedding photography and I was just exhausted from all of this personal stuff as well as work. I was burnt out from work as well. And started working as a barista and met my manager who I photographed her birth. And in deciding to become a doula, I also knew there was like lost doulas. Yeah. And I thought that was really special. And I did a lot of studying around like trauma and loss and miscarriage doulas. And I just thought, I was just like, wow, this is just, it was very healing in a strange way. I don't know that this is not necessarily for everyone that someone could, you know, be going through miscarriage and be around people who are having babies. I don't know that that's normal, that someone could just like carry through that. But in a way, for me, I feel like it was very cathartic to watch other people have their babies and support them in that. And it was very healing to watch, you know, some people that I was working with had had struggles with infertility for years and then were finally getting their rainbows. And it gave me hope. It was like some of these people had had multiple miscarriages and I was able to share, yeah, like I've been down the same path. I'm still struggling there, you know, still not, don't have our baby. And we have hope for the future. And I'm so excited for you where you're at right now. And we got pregnant again in the beginning of 2018 after I had been a doula for a while. And this baby, I got so sick so fast. I was like barfing every day and just like throwing up. And I was like, this is it. I don't know what happened, but this is it. We had just, and the funny thing is we had just signed up to see a fertility doctor. Yeah. So I had had 5 miscarriages previously, kind of like sporadically here and there. Or I had had 4. I'd had 4 miscarriages sporadically. And so this was like the 5th pregnancy. And I was like, this is going to happen. Like, I'm so sick. This has never happened to me before. I was like, we saw, we went in for our ultrasound at, I think, like 8 weeks and everything looked great. And then around 11 weeks, we were scheduled to go in for another ultrasound at 12 weeks. And I lost all of my pregnancy symptoms. So wasn't sick anymore. I could eat everything again. I felt, and in the pit of my stomach, like I knew, and I told my husband, I was like, I think I'm losing this baby just because I don't have any symptoms. I'm not bleeding or anything, but just like all of my symptoms disappeared. And he was like, I think you're just stressed and worried, you know, because we've had such bad luck. And I think that, you know, don't get ahead of yourself until we go and see a doctor. And right the day before we were scheduled to go in for our ultrasound, I started spotting. And the morning at the hospital, I mean, at the, we were seeing a midwife at the midwife clinic. I went to the bathroom before our ultrasound and there was like clots. And I was like, yeah, I knew it. Like, it was just devastating. I was just like, oh my gosh, like this is happening again. And I was 12 weeks along at this time. This was the farthest I'd ever gotten into a pregnancy. The only time I'd ever had morning sickness. And it was so hard. Like it was the hardest ultrasound I ever sat through, just like sitting there. And I'm so thankful it was at a midwife's office because the midwife was there and she was so sweet. She was this little Irish lady and she had like a thick accent and she was just like so calm and not composed, but she wasn't clinical in that space. She was like, I can't find a heartbeat. And she called around and found another ultrasound tech who was more experienced to come over. And he also did an ultrasound because she was like, I just want to confirm this. And he was kind. And the baby had a cystic hygroma on the back of her neck, which is like where there's like a pocket of fluid that's like larger than normal. And it's usually a sign of like a chromosomal abnormality. So they were able to tell us about that and tell us, you know, like you could see it in the ultrasound pretty clearly. And it was so hard because we had had a healthy ultrasound where we had seen like, you know, the baby's heart rate and everything. And then to have one that was, you know, so starkly negative and the baby was just gone, you know, and we had just gone to start, you know, into a fertility clinic to start doing some in-depth testing right before we found out we were pregnant with this baby. So we were able to go back to the fertility clinic and they did another ultrasound to confirm the next day. And they saw the same thing. They were like, yeah, there's a very clear cystic hygroma. We got some ultrasound pictures, which I'm thankful for. And then they said, well, given the circumstances that this is your 5th miscarriage, we really think that it would be helpful if we were able to do a DNC and collect the tissue and do a kind of just like a chromosomal abnormality test and just run some labs on everything to see how things are.
Thank you all so much for being here this week to listen to a part one of Amelia's story through her miscarriage experience. So if you want to reach out to Amelia, you can find her at Protiva Creative on Instagram, which is Protiva Creative. And you can reach out to her there. Next week, we'll be having part two, where she does talk a bit more about her DNC and miscarriage experience, but also talks about her, you know, daughter, Esme, and the pregnancy, birth, and postpartum experience with her. So thank you so much for listening this week, and we will all talk to you soon.